Without trust, society stagnates.
Economies decline.
And businesses fail.
My Security Media believes through security,
trust between individuals,
organisations,
and government can be maintained. Welcome to the
Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity Weekly Podcast and recording in Sydney. And I'm joined by Ron Gauci, the Chief Executive Officer for the Australian Information Industry Association. Ron, thanks for joining us.
Pleasure, Chris. Thank you.
Ron, we've grabbed you after a media release came out from the AIIA the other day. The association is obviously one of the sort of the peak associations for the information industry here in Australia, with some global membership as well. And you've provided the support to the Australian government's contact tracing app, COVID Safe. You've received a briefing from government. I thought we would at least get your insights into, one, the sort of the context of the briefing, and given the power and I suppose the representation that the AIIA has in Australia, it's a big move for the association to support the government's app in this, and obviously gives a lot of kudos to the app. So maybe I think if you start off introducing yourself to the audience and the association, and then we'll move into the briefing that you received from the government.
Yes, certainly, Chris, and thanks for the opportunity to explain our position. The AIIA does represent a very broad cross-section of the ICT industry. We have members both domestic and international. We have small to large enterprise organisations that we represent, and we also represent organisations across the depth and breadth of our industry. So we have security companies, we have cloud companies, etc. So this app and the COVID-19 situation impacts our membership base completely, but all in different ways depending on the demographic of our member base. So when we speak on behalf of the AIIA, obviously we need to be very clear on representing our members and representing the interests of the industry as well now making sure that we're cognizant of the health and security and privacy of Australian citizens. So I guess we need to make sure that we didn't make any decision lightly or throw support lightly. We're on one hand working with government on initiatives, and on the other hand we sometimes play a lobbyist or a role in, I guess, causing or seeking further discussion from the government, and we want to keep the government accountable. So there's a whole lot of roles that we play in this process.
Yep. I noticed you do have a policy advisory network for the federal government. Who approached who in this? Was it the government on the front foot, or was it something that the AIIA called for?
I think the honest answer is that it probably went both ways. We were having conversations inside government, and other parts of government then came to us, and those conversations merged through the time. So it'd be fair to say that based on the number of conversations we have and the initiatives taken by the government and its own stakeholders, that they came together and morphed together as a result of an alignment, of the areas that needed to be addressed.
Okay. Now, according to the release, you received a briefing from Stuart Robert, the Minister for Government Services, the DTA Digital Transformation Agency's Randall Brigaud, and the...
Brigaud.
In the release... Brigaud, sorry. Yes. My French isn't the best. And the head of the Australian Cybersecurity Centre, Rachel Noble, although I know she's the Director General of the Australian Signals Directorate, not the ACSC. Was that just these three, or was there any sort of technical boffins there as well in support of these three?
There were others. Abby Bradshaw, who in fact is the head of Australian Cyber Security Centre, so we had to amend our own release. We picked
That's
up
fair
the
enough.
Error, so not all of us are perfect. So there were other experts on the call that gave us the opportunity to ask some fairly deep questions. And whilst we had met previously and agreed on an in principle position, the briefing really helped us to get answers to questions that we had, and as a result of that, we then issued our statement of support. But it wasn't tacit support initially. It was just really to understand what it is that the government was doing, why it was doing it, how it was doing it, asking questions around the privacy issue and the technology that sits behind it, and getting assurances around data sovereignty, etc. So we were given a very good opportunity to ask our in-depth questions, and we walked away from that discussion with obviously a level of comfort.
Fair enough. I think one thing that's been raised, and I'll give James Riley from Innovation Oz a plug here, and he's raised the issue around AWS being an offshore, and it really comes down to that sovereignty of Australian companies as well. I do know that you've got Apple and Google as a membership base. And he's also raised that the servers stored in a Chinese-owned data centre. Is that something that came up in the discussions?
Well, it did, but I want to put that into context and bear in mind that the other organisations that James, and I've read the article, so the other organisations that James refers to, a number of those are members of ours as well. So we, again, want to be representative of our entire base. I think James made a general comment about AWS's locations of its data centres. I also know that AWS has data centres in Australian companies on an Australian location, so we shouldn't really generalise from that point of view. But I do find it really interesting that this has come up as a point of discussion, because I still find it interesting that so many apps that Australians use today are totally insecure when it comes to tracking our movements, behavioural patterns, release confidential information, and yet we continue to use them. If people are truly serious about securing your privacy, then turn your phone off completely. This we have got assurances from the government. We were comfortable with the assurances we got, not only from the government and from the technical experts on the call, that the data was to be housed in Australia, kept in Australia, and in fact the information is residing on the phone, not necessarily in a data centre. And remember too that the whole process is voluntary, so it's not as if this has been mandated, so people do have a choice. I think where this comes undone more than anything else is that, you know, I think if we're pragmatic, there is a history of public mistrust of government and anything that appears to track, store and centralise private information. We understand that. We understand that there's an actual paranoia and concern from the Australian public, but I think this app goes a long way to allowing us. It's been tested successfully elsewhere. It'll enable Australians to come out of lockdown restrictions sooner, and in which turn enables us to start the process of normalisation, which I think is really important at this point in time.
Yep, and I think that's the important part here, I think, is that the trust issue is really the key area that the government's been kind of lacking on. We've covered privacy previously, and I think the app and the way it seems to function has a small privacy footprint in that respect, in terms of the identifiable information. I think the other issues that might have come up in your discussion would have been around the functionality in the application. Let's just put functionality aside. You just mentioned that this is an opportunity for the app to contribute to the COVID sort of fight and the way that society may well get back to what might appear to be normal. Where is the application of the app? We've got about 2 million or so Australians have downloaded it, and there's a lot of numbers floating around as to what is the key take-up rate. Where is the application of it? Where is that sweet spot, and how applicable will this app actually be into the future? Is it really something that we absolutely have to have?
Well, I think it is something we absolutely have to have right now, whilst we are not able to produce vaccines and ready cures. So we can either remain in lockdown for fear of having to come into contact with someone, or we can use technology like this that helps us detect where someone may have actually been diagnosed with COVID-19 and also, I guess, trace our contact base from there, so we can easily get to people that may have been affected and impacted. I think there's the we've got to get beyond the simplicity of it. The reality is that I voluntarily register. I voluntarily give my information in terms of my location. I need to be within what it is, 1.5, 2 meters of someone for about 15 minutes for my Bluetooth to register. And that's assuming that the other person has actually been diagnosed, and therefore they have to then go and once they've been diagnosed, the doctor will recommend that they actually click the button on the app if they've registered. Of which case, again, that's a voluntary requirement. So it, just think then, if someone has gone through the process, been diagnosed, been recommended by the doctor to click, and they click, then in that situation, I will be alerted if someone has created a risk for me within, again, that couple of metres in that time frame. So I think I would rather have that situation occur where I've been alerted than continue my lockdown situation, knowing full well that I know in my area there haven't been any cases diagnosed. But it's a real safety precaution, remembering that each one of those steps is voluntary. If we are responsible at this time and we're very keen to get back to normality, then these applications make that a reality.
Did it come up in the briefing, the consideration to making it mandatory?
No. This is something that the government and we have been very aware of all the time, that this should be something that's voluntary and keep the responsibility with the individual. And if we are responsible to ourselves and our loved ones and those around us, then that's a decision we should be making.
I suppose one other question I had on that is, if you're notified that you've come into contact with a COVID case via the app, what's the legal obligation then on you? Do you, before you even get tested, you should self-isolate? So does it not potentially put the onus back on to those who have come into contact before they get tested, they then have to self-isolate? What's the expectation on those that get notified?
Well, I think the governments have been really keen on making sure that anyone who exercises or experiences any symptoms should be tested anyway. Yep. So I think you are right to say, Chris, that if the app detects that I've come into contact, I should self-isolate, get tested, and be sure that I've got all clearance before I come into contact with anyone else. I think that's, again, the beauty of this app, that I will be given an alert, if you like, pretty quickly that I may now be at risk, and I can take that action rather than wait for 2 weeks for symptoms to emerge and then go get tested and then have to think about who I'd come into contact with during that period of time.
Yep, fair enough. And I think the sort of the final issue is the functionality of the app. What's your understanding in terms of the app and sort of updates that may well come, both on sort of battery power and the Bluetooth use, and then having the app open on iPhones as well? Yeah. Is it going to be improved? Is it a bit of a work in progress, or is the app finalised as you understand it?
Well, no, I don't think it is finalised, and I think there was a general acceptance that as information came to hand, even in the design, like we've in the conversation that we had on Monday, there was some advice around the design elements. So the government accepts that, like any app, it will continue to be updated to improve its functionality and usability. So my expectation is it will continue to morph. In terms of the battery life, we had been given technical advice from Apple and Android providers and Google that the battery life the technology within the app is to preserve battery life and optimize it. So we think that there's obviously some good thought already given to that, and there may well be further advancements, but it's my expectation that the app will continue to be updated as improvements come into play.
Right. Well, look, it's a fascinating area. It's a large area, and too, it's obviously awakens the Australian public, I'm sure, to both privacy, but also the way apps and technology is using. And one of the arguments raised, and as you've raised as well, Most of us are online using social media. We have these devices with us. So it's just another sort of layer, I suppose, of technology in our lives. And it's so I suppose for more information, we'll put some links out onto the podcast notes. But I've just had a quick look at the biosecurity, human biosecurity emergency, human coronavirus with pandemic potential emergency requirements, public health contact information determination 2020 Act. That is the piece of legislation that around the coronavirus, sorry, COVID safe app. It's amazing just to be reading this type of legislation. Here we are in 2020. It's an amazing time. Look, I think good on the AIIA for coming out. There's not too many industry associations that are prepared to come out and support this type of application, and I think it's well worth the discussion too. So. Ron, thank you very much for joining us. And have you got any other final comments? Where do you anticipate this to be? And I suppose from the industry's perspective, where do you see the industry for 2020 in your sort of your final comments? How is this going to play out in your perspective?
Yeah, thanks, Chris, and thanks for the support as well. I guess final message is we do encourage as many people as possible to take up the registration. Bear in mind when we talk about numbers, I think you were alluding to before, that we're talking about the people, the number of people who have mobile devices, not necessarily the Australian population. So what we're looking for is a good percentage of mobile phone users who can use the technology. So that's the first part. I think the second comment to your question is that this has highlighted the important role that innovation technology plays in protecting our health and protecting our economy and protecting us as individuals and as in the Australian society. So we're pleased with the way the industry has rallied behind the various stakeholders and we're delighted with the rally of support that's been offered through a number of different means, including our AustralianBusinessContinuity.com.au website, to help people, you know, provide some sort of normality and continuation of what they do. So this has been a really good example of how technology is an essential service and plays an important part in our society.
Well, that's a very appropriate final comment. So Ron Gauci, the Australian Information Industry Association Chief Executive Officer, thanks very much for joining us on the Cybersecurity Weekly podcast.
Thanks, Chris.